want to welcome everybody here tonight. We are going to have the privilege of hearing Phil Arsenault here in a few minutes. And, you know, I know that occasionally I hear somebody say, "Oh, those Yankees." And, you know, I guess maybe you're not even thinking that because you know Phil's from Boston and you're here. But just in case there's a smidgen of that, you know, his nickname is Bubba.
Yes.
So, you know, he should be right at home here in the South. But seriously, Phil has been doing team ministry for something like 22 years in Boston. It's just got a lot of passion about parenting teens and helping parents be the best they can for their teens and preteens. And so we just have had a wonderful time this afternoon just sharing ideas. And it's been very inspiring for me. So I know that you're just going to get a lot out of this weekend. Yeah. So we'll go ahead and turn it over to Phil.
Well, I can't say enough thanks for having me. Joe and Sarah have been very hospitable. It's been great to be here. Little history of me. I've, as Joe said, working with the team ministry for 22 years. I've got a very beautiful, attractive, spiritual wife. I'm lucky. Great roof. And so she's great. She couldn't come because we have two wonderful kids. A 12 and a 10-year-old, Scotty. He's up to here on me, 12 years old. He's going to be taller than his dad, and he's fired up about that. And I got a beautiful daughter, Kira, 10 years old. And I don't know how you feel. You probably feel the same way, but I love being a father.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of my favorite things in the whole world to be. And we just came back from vacation. I was telling Joe when we were there on vacation, we were on St. Pete's Beach in Florida, but there was this huge fireworks display, and at the end of the fireworks were shooting off low. I was on the first balcony, about a quarter of a mile from where they were shooting off, and all of a sudden, this huge explosion went off. I mean, a huge, it actually blew in my face, and I ran back like a chicken. I'm a chicken. I ran back in the condo going, "Man, I'm not messing with this." So I went back out, and another huge explosion. No one was seriously hurt, but they blew out 22 windows in the hotel behind it. There was whatever, I don't know what the malfunction was, but those pyros weren't good pyros, I guess. I don't know. But it was wild. We had a blast July 4th. I don't know what you guys did. But what I'd like to do, we're a small enough group, is maybe we can get the, if we get the husbands to introduce themselves and their wife and tell me the age of your children. And so at least I, and please, when you come and see me, keep introducing yourself. I really have a very bad memory. I really do. I don't remember names very well. And I'm at my worst nightmare. Teen camp is coming up. And so you get these kids who I haven't seen for 360 days. And they come up, "You remember my name? You remember my name?" And teenagers get so hurt. "You don't remember my name. You remember his name?" I go, "That's my son. I live with him. Of course I remember." Oh, and then they just, all week, "Do you remember my name?" And I go, 15 kids come up to me and said that. Oh, and this is the fifth time she's coming up. I still don't remember, but I promise I'll try. But so I'm not good with names. Oh, but well, one thing, by the way, it's really funny because the swamp, it's really cool the way you guys do it. You have 6 weeks of camp, or is we kind of put ours all in 1 week. So I'm sure you have as many people as we do. We just get them all in 1 week. We got Toronto coming, and all of New England comes, but we have 520 teenagers signed up. So we're gonna have actually 677 people at our camp. So we kind of like have like a massive group, but it's a lot of fun to work with. We have like 150 counselors, so that takes care of the 500, and you know we get a lot of help. But so that's gonna be cool. That's coming up in about 5 weeks. But so if we get the husbands to introduce themselves, their wives, and age of your children, boy, girls, and so at least I can kind of get a feel for what we have, and we'll start here.
Amen. Steve Galbraith, Roxanne. We have three kids, two boys and a girl. The oldest son, Ben, is 23, and Kevin is 21, and Kristen is 18. And they're all at home this summer.
Wow.
But they're headed back to school in August. It's full.
Joe, Sarah, Heartline, we have four children, two boys, two girls, 23, 21, 19, 17.
I've got the whole story with those.
That's yeah. Right.
Well, I'm Steve Collier, and this is my wife, Barbara. And we have two boys, 16 and a 14, and we have a 10-year-old daughter.
Oh, great.
And this is our good friend, Kathy Stair, whose husband is not here. And she has 11 and 9-year-old daughters.
Great. Our best buddies with
yeah. Yeah. Oh, if you're here and you don't have a husband, you can introduce yourself.
Yes, it's not a Mormon thing. So.
Yes.
Todd and my Tracy. We have four children and a grandson. Lynette, 23, Justin, 20, Michael, 13, Dakota, 9, and then little baby Anthony's 2, and that's it.
Wow.
That's it?
Are you kidding?
I'm Donald, and my husband
Carl's
not here tonight.
Okay.
We have two girls, 16 and 13.
Great. Yep.
I'm Tom Lassoon. My lovely wife, Jennifer, is not able to be here with me tonight. We have only one child. We're the couple that have one child. And he is almost 16 years old, my son Noah.
Okay.
I'm in a state. My lovely wife, Dave, is not here. Two girls, ages 11 and 12, Danielle.
Two girls, and it looks like he's great. He's looking like he's doing well. Two girls, that's good.
And I'm Ward. This is my wife, Mary Rutland, and we've got two kids. Our son is Garrett. He's 17, and our daughter Kelly is 15.
Great.
Yeah. All right. My name is Terry Armstead. This is my lovely wife, V. Too very forgiving today. Thank you. Sorry, I screwed up right before we came. All right. We have three children. Our oldest Nisha just turned 15 on Sunday. Our 6-year-old is Brianna. Those are our girls, of course. And then our son Bryson is 2.5.
Wow.
My name is Mark Wadsworth. This is my lovely wife, Angie. We have five children.
Wow.
Daughter Blanca, who is 21. She has two children, our grandkids Yvette and Julie. We have Lilia, who's 18. We have Danny, who is almost 14. And we have Terry, who's 4. And Rebecca, who is 17 months.
Wow.
And I probably left one of them in
my mind. It happens when you have that.
I'm Valerie Hepburn. My husband is at home with the boys. We're swapping off with you tomorrow. But we have three boys, 12, 12, and will be 2 in August.
Wow.
Melvin and Kathy Jordan. We have four kids and a grandson. I kind of feel like a senior citizen here today. Our oldest is 29. And then we have Neil. He's 29. Gregory, who's 20. In a couple of days. That's next week, so I'm not giving it to him.
You got to earn it.
Yeah, you got to earn it. Yeah, on the 23rd, he'll be 20, 21. But Gregory, who's 20. Brittany, who's 18. And Brandon is the only one who's at home, is 16.
Great. Does everyone know these guys?
Yeah.
No kids, no introduction. They have
I'm Mark Vogt. I have three children, 29, 25, and 19. When I'm 20, he's the youngest one. They're all out of house for empty nesters.
Great. Wow. I'm here to learn from you then. That's good. Okay. It's great. It's good to hear the balance of how many kids we have represented and everything else like that. But, you know, being in the teen ministry for 21 years, the number one place, if you ask where I could be to make that, where I'd want to have the most influence, it's with the parents. Because the stronger the parents, the stronger the youth ministry, right?
Yeah.
And the weaker the parents, the weaker the youth ministry. And James Dobson has this great quote that I love. He says, everything sooner or later circles around the quality of family life. And it really does. Your kids will be remembering stories when they're 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 60, 70 years old, talking about things that happened when they were raised and things that their parents did and the example that their parents set. I love the first part of this series. The first part of this series, it's not super practical. But it gives you some great information about teenagers and what their makeup is like. It's very informational, and I think it'll give you a lot to think about. And I am not here this weekend to overwhelm anybody. So let me just start there. I'm doing a four-part series, and actually less than 24 hours. Okay, this is usually I do one part every 2 weeks. And so give people time to digest it, chew on it, you know, and work on it. So, again, I've done the four-part series in 24 hours. I've done it in Phoenix. I did it in L.A., and now I'm doing it here. So please don't get overwhelmed. I know that Joe said that he's going to set up follow-up time after this stuff, and maybe you can do one series at a time or even a half a series at a time or whatever you guys do to follow up on it. Also, I sent Joe all four parts of the series. So you can email him, and he'll send you all four parts of the series. But the first part is understanding your teenager. And here's from the book Understanding Your Teen. It says, kids who thrive during their adolescence usually have parents who care enough to understand them and stay involved. And I think the key phrase here is staying involved, no matter how much pain you feel or how much pain they feel. Proverbs 20, verse 5, it says, the purposes of a man's heart are deep waters, but a man of understanding draws them out. Teenagers' hearts are deep waters. And who are the ones who need to draw them out? It's the parents. We need to be men and women of deep spiritual understanding. You can't understand males or females of any age, including yourself, without knowing about the forces that operate within. And that's what we're going to talk about a lot, is what's operating inside these teenagers. And, you know, if teenagers, if they could talk to parents, they'd say, hello, in case you haven't noticed, I'm in some type of serious transition. And if I were a spacecraft, I'd communicate, Houston, I think we have a problem. And that's what teenagers at times want to communicate with their parents. We must make sure that we remember. But let's talk about the body. We're going to talk about four different changes. First one is the body changes, okay? And the first is puberty. Here's a definition I heard. The human body comes equipped by God with a time bomb. When the bomb goes off, an electrochemical shockwave is sent throughout the body, triggering in every cell a growth frenzy that transforms a childlike body into an adult-looking body within just a few years. So let's talk about this. What happens at puberty? What changes do kids go through? Anyone? We'll just raise your hand. What are some things they go through during puberty? What are the body changes?
Mood swings, that chemical imbalance, I guess.
Absolutely, mood swings. What else? What else during puberty? What happens?
Deep voice.
Deep voice. Change of voice, right? Yeah. My son, you talk to him on the phone, you think he's my sister, and then, but 2 years from now, you go, oh, it's your dad, Navy George. Yeah, they're not saying I'm a female anymore. That's great. But that happens to kids all the time. What else? Voice change, mood swings, what else? Puberty.
Growth spurts.
Growth spurts, absolutely. Growth spurts.
Self-consciousness about how they look.
Yes. Self-consciousness, how they look.
Any deodorant.
They need deodorant. Absolutely. They do need deodorant. I mean, and even at a younger age these days. I won't say anything about my kids.
They want to become the alpha male or female. They try to fight for leadership in the house.
Yep. Good. Very good.
Just the sexual tensions build.
Oh, they build.
The desires are there.
Yeah, the growth of pubic hair. You know, and the sexual desire is growing in a greater way. Mm-hmm. What else? Anything else during puberty?
Pimples.
Absolutely. You start pimples, and you can be really self-conscious. Mm-hmm. You know, there's growth of fat-bearing cells that happen that they didn't have before. And someone talked about being very self-conscious of how you look. Increased height and weight. Kids can be very awkward. I mean, in their coordination, they can be very, extremely awkward. And then you get, in some people, you get a difference of, you've got a 12-year-old who looks like a 9-year-old, and you got a 12-year-old who looks like a 15-year-old. Yeah. So you've got 6 years difference. You've got a 9-year-old and a 15-year-old, but they're both 12.
Yeah.
I mean, so and people go through the spurts at different times.
Right.
And, But a lot of these things. Oh, and then you got the first period for the girls, the involuntary ejaculation for the boys. I mean, that can be a very like, whoa, what happened? What's going on here? You get hormone surges that wreak havoc on the kids, and the body can become a constant state of problems that they've never ever faced before. I had one kid that I discipled since he was 12 to age 18. He had a lot of pimple problems. What's the other word for acne? He had a bad acne problem. And to my shame, you know, I never asked him, you know how he felt about it, blah blah. He was he shared at teen camp 2 years ago. And he's out of college now. He's actually doing great. He's an entrepreneur, making tons of money. Very smart kid. He said, you know what, growing up in the teen ministry, the whole time I was in the teen ministry, I was insecure because of my acne.
Yeah.
And I never drew that out of him. Where I feel like I could have helped him if I understood the forces that were operating within. We've got to understand what's happening to these kids and their body changes. So that's the first thing. They go through body changes. You've got to know that. You've got to understand that. The second one is what goes on with the brain. And here's from an article from Dr. J.G. and Chief of Brain Imaging in the Child Psychiatry Branch at the National Institute on Mental Health. He peered through 1,800 different teenagers' heads. And he's been doing this for 13 years through MRIs. And listen to what he's come up with. It's unbelievable stuff. You may have already heard some of it, but it even gets deeper as years go on. I'm going to share a few things about the brain. No matter how a particular brain turns out, its development proceeds in stages generally from back to front. The very last part of the brain to be pruned and shaped to its adult's dimensions is the prefrontal cortex, home of the so-called executive functions. Planning, setting priorities, organizing thoughts, suppressing impulses, weighing the consequences of one's actions. That's the last thing to develop. In other words, the final part of the brain to grow up is the part capable of deciding. That's the last one to grow up. Scientists and the general public attributed the bad decisions teen made, they used to attribute it to hormonal changes. But once we started mapping where and when the brain changes were happening, we could say, aha, the part of the brain that makes teenagers more responsible is not finished maturing yet. Hello?
Mm-hmm.
Hello? Though hormones still remain an important part of the story. The brain region that puts the brakes on risky impulsive behavior are still under construction. The parts of the brain responsible for things like sensation seeking are getting turned on in big ways around the time of puberty. But the parts for exercising judgment are still maturing throughout the course of adolescence. So you've got this time gap between when things impel kids toward taking risks early in adolescence and when things that allow people to think before they act come online. It's like turning on the engine of a car without a skilled driver at the wheel. And now listen to this. This will explain some campus students' behavior. Gene says the best estimate for when the brain is truly mature is 25 years old. Isn't that mind-boggling stuff? And then he jokes, well, that's when you can rent a car. Avis must have some pretty sophisticated neuroscientists. And I'm going to read more about the brain and listen to some of the effects on the brain with pornography. Listen to this. This is Richard Resek. He's another neurologist. Pornography's effect on the brain. Thanks to the latest advances in neuroscience, we now know that emotionally arousing images imprint alter the brain, triggering an instant involuntary but lasting biochemical memory trail. This applies to the so-called soft core and hardcore pornography. So the soft core is what they watch on TV. Hardcore is the pornographic sites kids can go to. This just opened my eyes. Once neurochemical pathways are established, they are difficult or impossible. Difficult or impossible to delete. So are there consequences to going to pornographic sites? Yeah, for life. Some of it could be for life. And this is more amazing stuff. More about the brain. Girls, another doctor, girls explain their brains mature faster than boys. And girls' brains are as much as 2 years ahead during puberty. You know, don't go using that against your son and your daughter, okay? In fact, neuroimaging shows that early on, the typical teen girl has a stronger connection between the areas of the brain that control impulse and judgment. So boys don't have that as much. It may not be until late adolescence or their early 20s that boys' brains catch up to the girls' peers. When it comes to emotions, Dr. Brizendine says, girls have their own area that's twice as large as boys, the hippocampus, which is the seat of the emotional memory. The female brain uses many centers in both hemispheres that activate in response to faces, voices, and expressions. Men, however, use only one side of their brain. Dr. Brizendine insists that despite the high wiring of our brain chemistry, this will bring it home, we do have free will. This is a doctor. We know this, but this is a doctor. Clearly not all women and men are the same, but for many the science is undeniable. Powerful hormones in the complex circuitry of the brain do shape our behavior and therefore our destiny. It's biology, and listen to the advice he gives. It's biology, and it needs hands-on parenting. It needs hands-on parenting. That's why teens need a lot of wisdom and careful monitoring by adults in order to let the good connections grow strong and to get rid of the bad connections. Isn't that amazing stuff?
Yeah. Yes.
That is mind-boggling. But it'll help you understand. That's what it's about, understanding your teenager. But they need hands-on parenting. It is really sad to me. Some of the saddest things are the drunk driving accidents that kill teenagers. Yeah. It's because their impulses are ahead. They don't put brakes on risky behavior. They don't weigh the consequences. A good friend of mine, my best friend coaches a high school basketball team in Massachusetts, and I work out the team. I played a lot of basketball growing up, and he actually asked me to be the JV coach, but I don't have time. I do the youth ministry. And so I work out their team, and it's a very phenomenal guy. They went to the state championship. They lost in the finals of the state championship, had a great team. He went off to Curry College, hardly ever drank, he didn't hardly do anything bad. One night he got drunk, took a girl, not his girlfriend, but a girlfriend out, and as he was driving home, he was drunk, got in an accident, killed the girl. And he ended up, I don't know what ended up happening. The coach has followed him and tried to help him through it. But he killed the girl because he made a bad decision.
Yeah.
Right. he made a bad decision. And we need, with our kids, we need hands-on parenting.
Yeah.
And we need to help them connect with wisdom and God's wisdom. Okay, first thing is the body changes. Second thing is the brain changes. And the third thing, I think I got four, so are we doing all right?
Yep.
Okay, good. Okay, we'll have a discussion after this, so hopefully we'll discuss more, and that'll be more interactive. The third is the intellect. Teenagers, for the first time, are gaining new insights into their world. They go from thinking concretely as kids, because kids are best taught with object lessons, to being an adolescent and thinking conceptually. That's why some of you cannot win an argument with your child. They're coming up, well, they're unreasonable. Yeah, they are. They can be. But some things they go through, like, how does God make sense in my life today? Jesus was here over 2,000 years ago. How does this relate to me? And if they don't want to recite the 66 books of the Bible, they want to know what's relevant to them in those books. In speaking to teenagers about spiritual things, you must relate to them or you're speaking another language. There's a great scripture that the principle lies in. They're talking about tongues, but the principle applies. 1 Corinthians 14:9-12. Unless you speak intelligible words with your tongue, how will anyone know what you are saying? You will be just speaking into the air. If then I do not grasp the meaning of what someone is saying, I am a foreigner to the speaker, and he is a foreigner to me. If we do not relate Jesus to their world, it's unintelligible to them. We're speaking to the ear, and you go, wow, I feel like they're not listening. Maybe they're not. Maybe they're not. Maybe you're a foreigner to them. It frustrates them, and it can stunt their growth when we don't relate on their level. You know, I'll tell you what's been, it's an ongoing battle, and I don't even blame the preachers, because some of them don't work with kids. But, I mean, even in Boston, there are probably, we have 7 regions in Boston, and I've been to all the services, and teenagers will be sitting in the service, and what the region leaders talk about is retirement. They talk about careers. They talk about being spiritual at work, and it is amazing. You can tell them all, you know, you got to relate to the teens. Some of them are just uncomfortable talking to teenagers.
Yeah.
And they don't speak to the kids in the service, and it's not good. You've got to help the region leaders and the preachers. If they're going to get up there preaching, the teens are going to be part of the audience, then they've got to talk to the kids and relate to the kids. Or you should separate the class out and let the teen leaders do the class, so at least they can get something that's related to them.
That's right. Yeah.
And you know, say, I do like when the families are together and everyone's in the service, but let's get the preacher to talk to the teenagers and the adults. I like the intergenerational thing, but the preacher's got to talk to everybody. And we got to take the teenagers where they're at and speak to that level. Because Jesus did. Because Jesus did. Phenomenal scriptures on that. We got to learn how to teach where they live as it relates to Jesus. Jesus did this for his disciples. Mark 4, verse 33. Jesus says, with many similar parables, Jesus spoke the word to them as much as they could understand. Jesus didn't go over their heads. Jesus didn't go beyond where they were. Jesus didn't say, die for your faith, before they even understood the love of Jesus and what motivates them to die for the faith. But we want them to die before they even know what they're dying for. Another great scripture, John 16, verse 12. Jesus said to his disciples, Jesus didn't throw Genesis to Revelation at them. This is what Jesus says. I have much more to say to you, more than you can now bear. So he didn't say it. Because I have a lot more to say to you, but you're not ready. Take teenagers where they're at and what they're ready to hear. Even in your parenting, take them for what they're spiritually ready to hear. So that's how to relate to them in the intellect and the spiritual side. But other new insights into a teenager's world as they think conceptually. Things like his things that go on. Things could have been different from they think about the past. Like say mom and dad's divorce, mom and dad could still be together. And they start generating guilt. Was it my fault? And they start feeling guilt for the first time. Was it their fault? They feel bitter. Well, was it their fault? Now I'm bitter. You know, was it my fault? I'm guilty. Was it their fault? Now I'm bitter. So they start getting those emotions. In the present, things should be different, and why aren't they? They can start developing anger or shame. Things should be different. Why can't mom and dad be together? Why can't we all get along? What I mean, this war in Iraq, what's going on? I'll go over to the Middle East and I'll settle it all. Let's all love each other. And that's what they're idealistic. But it doesn't happen like that. Things could be changed in the future. Why can't things be different with my parents, with my relationship with my peers? Why can they be disappointing? And if you tell them why you just don't understand, it's just life, it's human nature, they get frustrated by that. How another thing that changes for them is how people perceive them. Adults are disappointed in me. My teacher, coach, or parents hate me. They polarize things. You say one thing in a negative or label them in a negative way, and they can polarize it. I had one teenager that I worked with, and he was struggling with depression. And you know, I was talking to him saying, you know, what are some of the things you're sad about, blah, blah, blah. I said, you know what? I said one thing. Me and my dad were talking, and he actually said, "I'll never amount to anything," and he believed it.
Wow.
He believed it. We got to watch throwing out labeling words to our kids.
Absolutely.
Like, even I'll even get a little lighter here and say, "Wow, you're lazy." Okay, if that's his whole character, when you throw out these things, they're gonna say, "Wow, that's my whole character." Okay, I might be unmotivated in this area. But, I mean, I do work at some... I mean, you can't, don't throw labels out at your kids. Because, let me tell you, they polarize negative things about what people think about them. I mean, your kid ever comes home, the teacher hates me? No, they're just expecting things, but they can polarize it.
I have a question. Yes.
Did
you say polarize mean?
They make it bigger than what it really is. They make things out... They start perceiving, like... She's a teenage girl, and you're a teenage girl. And she's got a straight faced look, and you looked over at her, oh, she hates me. Look at how she looked at me. She hates me.
You're interpreting it.
Yeah, they're turning it in a very negative. And they never talk to each other. But they can, one look means that they, and then they start talking, they go, wow, she really likes me, they respect me. But they can perceive things in the negative. They make things out much worse in their mind than what people are truly thinking. I got a little scenario. Two college students met together in the fellowship. Mike says, wow, in the teen ministry we didn't talk. Steve says, oh, I thought you didn't like me. Mike, no, I actually not only liked you, but really respected you. Steve says, you're kidding me. The whole time? If I only knew, we would have been great friends in the teen. But it happened. It happened. I've heard these stories, and it happened. The kids just don't talk to each other. That's why as parents, send them back to their kids or get the families together to help build the friendships with them. You don't label the other parents. You don't judge the other parents. You don't judge the other kids, and you don't label the other kids. Rather, get each other together and build friendships together. We need each other to help raise our teens spiritually. They go through enough battles without having in-house fighting. Amen? And also some things they perceive is things can be hidden. I hide things so adults won't be disappointed with me, and so I won't get in trouble. Also, I don't necessarily have to do what my parents say. It's a rough one. My son's getting there. My son's a great boy, but he gets there. Things could get worse. I want to read this story. Teens have a new capacity to visualize the future and foresee painful events. They can be woken up to fear and failure. This really hit a chord in me. This is the story of this kid. And again, I'm reading this so we can help get through the facade the kids put on and that you can really try to dig deeper into what's really going on in their hearts. But listen to this story. This is a young teenager. He went to a baseball tryout. And watch what he thought in the whole baseball tryout. But watch the emotional hurt and loneliness he goes through in this tryout. In batting practice, I missed the first three pitches. Hit one line drive and two pop-ups and fouled off about 12 pitches. That's not how I planned it. Waiting in the outfield during batting practice, I tried to get in on the animated talk about the schedule, practice time, who would pitch the first game and positions. When Henry told me that two kids would be cut, fear made me deaf. My enthusiasm was as dry as my mouth. I began to look for two kids who were worse than I. Not finding any standout inferiors, I began to exaggerate their slight mistakes. I gave silent tips to the coach. See that? He swings late. That guy's overweight. He can't hit inside pitches. I think he's moody. As the practice wound down, I found myself vainly trying to avoid the coach's look. He seemed to be looking at me constantly. Soon, with a head signal, I was called over. The coach, 45, a giant of a man, World Series serious, laid a hairy arm lightly on my shoulder. I wished I was somewhere else. This is a true story. This is an autobiographical description of what this man really felt. He's a writer now. With that noticeable effort of an abrupt man trying to be gentle, he told me he could keep only 15 players and you are not one of them. He looked at me and I at him. He started to say something. I interrupted him with the biggest lie of my 12 years of my lifetime. Summoning the scantest remaining piece of dry courage in my broken soul, I said, "I understand. It's okay." Tears pushed my eyeballs from behind. "Don't cry, don't cry." I hid the inundating desire to be out of sight with an onstage casualness. I jaunted to the other side of the batter's box, picked up my glove, and summoning all my restraint, walked to the drinking fountain. I felt the eyes of the world watching. At the fountain I turned. No one was looking. I went behind the stands and slipped under the fence. I broke into a full-speed run, tearing through the woods and onto the path toward my house. I ran fast, faster, fastest. My mind blank. I ran my race with disappointment. Exhausted, I stopped. My heart beat as hard as my heartbreak. I sat down. I then laid on the grass. I looked directly into the sun, wishing for blindness. My stomach tightened. A small tear escaped. I tried to stop it, but others' tears followed. Now they grew. They fell, gushing up and out from an exploding well. I tried to stop, but I saw. Great swells of feeling shook through my body. Anger, rage, disappointment, and overwhelming hurt. My dream was murdered. My hope gasped for life. I could not stop sobbing. Is that amazing?
Yeah.
That's a powerful story. I'm wondering if the parent knew that when he came walking in the house. This is what kids really go through. I'm telling you is what I went through as a kid in trials. But it's not just trying out sports. It could be academics. It can be musical, recitals. But kids feel a lot. And it's really cool, the end of this, said I paid for wanting too much, for panning after the unattainable. It was a long time before I could feel that being cut judged only my baseball skill and not me. He says, I wish that the lesson that another's judgment of my skill or power is not a judgment of my personal worth had lasted a lifetime, but it did not. I still confuse judgments of my ability with judgments of myself. But now I know I can survive. Now I no longer whip myself as long as it's hard. At times when life cuts my dreams, I choose Popeye's wisdom over Coach Cummings' judgment. The realistic Popeye, homely but proud, says, I am what I am, and that's enough. But I just want you to understand what can go on 12, 13, 14, 15, 16-year-old kids' lives. That their world is much bigger than you realize it is. Mm. we've had much more time to ponder and understand what's going on. Go ahead.
When you ask your child, well, what are you thinking? Are you, like, you ask them, what are they thinking? And they keep telling you nothing. Or how do you feel about it? Nothing. Or have you thought about it? No. How does it make you sad? You ask all the questions, and they keep come back to you with no, nothing. I haven't thought about it. Like, nothing is ever wrong. But you see their body language is telling you something's wrong.
Right.
How do you approach that?
Yeah, that's a great question. A great question. And, you know, all questions answered has a lot to do with family history, right, and relationship that you both have with your children. And questions like that will be answered in the four-part series. Okay. And what I really advise is that you get parenting circles and you help each other. Because it is powerful to get peers to help peers. You know, you think I'm doing this parenting series for you, and you're right, but I'm doing it for me, too. I'm going to sit in that circle of discussion, and I'm going to share about my family and my struggles, and I'm going to get help from you. And then you get help from me. We should be helping one another with questions like this. And being in each other's lives going, oh, and maybe you can even find a mentor to get with your son. And maybe that mentor, it could even be a parent in this room, could get more out of your son. And maybe your son then will more open up to you because there'll be someone who's on your side and coming from both ways. But I do have a book that I recommend to you. Is the DNA of Parent-Teen Relationships. And it's by Gary Smalley and his son. I forget what his son's name is. But the DNA of Parent-Teen Relationships has some great stuff when communicating with your teenager. And part three is all about communicating with your teen. But the DNA of Parent-Teen Relationships is a great book.
Gary Smalley?
Gary Smalley. But I love, this is one of my favorite quotes in this whole part of the series. And it's from the book Raising Tough Kids. It says, The burdens our kids bear is having parents who have forgotten what it's like to be an adolescent. And we got to be careful of the self-righteousness. Or if our kids go through something that we didn't go through, big deal. They're going to have different experiences. But you went through a lot of this stuff. Or you're not very in touch with yourself yet. You need to, you know. But we have got to remember what it was like for us as teenagers. Okay, my last one. So you got the body change, the change in the brain, and then you got the change in the intellect. As if that's not enough. Yeah, that's a lot, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's a lot going on. But the fourth one is just as big as all the other three, and that's the emotions. That's the emotions. Proverbs 19:22. What a man desires is unfailing love. The two top things, you can write this and take it to the bank, that teens will search and find, they will search and find in this stage of life, is love and acceptance. They will find it. Love, meaning what kind of person do I have to be to get someone to love me? If they do not get it at home, they will find it. They will find it. And you know the stories, including all the wrong places, right?
Yeah.
Or they're looking for acceptance. What kind of person do I have to be to accomplish something significant where others will accept me? That others will value. And they'll do crazy stuff if they don't get it at home. If daddy and mommy wanted him or her to be someone else, but they want to be an artist, and we push on what we want for them, and yet they want to be an artist, they don't get accepted at home, boy, they'll find somewhere else to get accepted and valued for what they do.
Right.
And even if they have to jump in bed with someone, right? Oh, I feel acceptance from this boy because dad didn't accept me. A minister asked one powerful drug dealer in Boston, how did we lose you to the underworld, and how are we losing other kids to you right now? He stared him in the eye and said, I'm there and you're not. Mm-hmm. When the kids go to school, I'm there and you're not. When he wants a pair of sneakers or just someone older to talk to or feel safe, and strong around. I'm there and you're not. You lose and I win.
Wow.
And we know that teens can do the most random acts of craziness to feel loved, to be accepted. Many things I've come across in my 18 years in youth ministry. One is sexual acts, including homosexual acts, and heterosexual acts. Some experimenting, others indulging, but looking for love and acceptance. One kid lit a stink bomb in his school. This is from a good family. He goes, "Well, why'd you do it?" He said, "You know, my friend wanted me to, and I just did it." I mean, this guy was a good kid. He was actually in some kind of a teenage military type thing. He lit a stink bomb. He got demoted in his military thing. I mean, he just made, but it was a random act of craziness. I think he felt accepted by himself. One time, when I was a teenager, I mean, this was one of the dumbest acts of all mankind. My friend, okay, I'm going to date myself. My friend wanted to steal a record album. Okay, a record album. You know what? It's saving me, man. The gray hair, you know, it's all good. But my friend did it. But I didn't want to be outdone, and he stole something, and I want to be accepted with my friend. So I go, he did it. Wow, that was really slippery. I'm going to do it. I get a record album. I put it under a shirt like this. I had a tight shirt. All right, I'm good. I had it. I go, wow, I'm slick. I didn't even take a half a step, and a security guy grabbed me and said, "Come with me." But I did it all for acceptance. Because I wanted to go back, and we wanted to have bragging stories, and we wanted to be, but you do dumb things. But it's all in the name of love and acceptance. Teens, in the name of searching for love and acceptance, are asking, who am I and where do I fit in? Questions of identity, purpose, and meaning. Questions of identity, purpose, and meaning. In Ecclesiastes 3:11 says that God has set eternity in the hearts of men. I believe teenagers' cries, confusion, and pain at times is them running after their wants rather than their deeply rooted need set there by God. Those needs for unfailing love was set there by God. The only way they'll get it is not even from their parents, but it's from God. But we can be Christ-like so they can feel it at home. Parents, we must ask ourselves, how can I best lead them, guide them, and nurture them to what they long for and are crying out for and has been set there by God? Because as the prodigal son teaches us, their deepest need is to be led home to Jesus. That's what their deepest need is. And again, today, and I do appreciate the questions, today is not for practical purposes. Today is for you to understand the forces that operate within a teenager. And I'll just conclude on this. We can never minimize the transition and changes our teens are going through. They get a new body, a new brain, new understanding of their world, and their place in it at puberty. That's a lot going on. Even the American Psychiatric Association does not allow labels to be placed on those under 18 years of age, because of the changes still to take place in many of these young people. I'm telling you, I am at a passion. I mean, I can cry. It disturbs me. It hurts me when I hear other parents being critical of other parents' kids in the church. I go, what are you doing? What are you doing? They're all going through so many different changes. And why are we critical about other parents' kids? Let's help the parents. We should be supporting each other's families. You know what? If we're raising our son or daughter, we'll teach them how to handle other weak teenage Christians. If there are weak teenagers in our teen ministry, big deal. Welcome to the church. We shouldn't be critical of those weak teenagers. The American Psychiatric Association says don't label those kids. Oh, you're just uncommitted. No, maybe they're hurt. because they have a disconnection with mom and dad. And if we get closer to the mom and dad, maybe we'll help them figure out the disconnection, and we can help out a whole other family. Wouldn't that be a cool way for the church to operate?
Amen.
Rather than to judge and label each other's kids. Well, my little Janie is being brought down by that bully Janet. No, they're not. We've got to teach little Janie to be more mature in how to deal with weak Christians. And as a parent, that's what I want to do. And if my daughter's being pulled down, I'm going to talk to you. You're allowing yourself to be pulled down. And you've got to figure out what is it in your character that you're allowing yourself to be pulled down. And I'm not going to run around and blame other families. I'm going to go help other families. And I hope we all take that same passion. I'll tell you, this region will be so much solid and stronger and be a brighter light to our community. If that's the way we operate here.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, that little preaching there, so that took away a little teaching. Yeah, okay. Everything I said about a teenager right now, and I mean this with all my heart. I've been working with teenagers for 21 years. It's not meant to draw a bleak picture of teenagers. It's not at all. It's a stage which God has them go through in Psalm 139, verse 13 to 14. It's paraphrased here. God knit them together and they were wonderfully made. This is a wonderful stage of life. Yet I hope that you more, my goal is that you see it as an opportune time to step up your parenting.
Amen.
That's why we're here.
Mm-hmm.
Parents are beyond any doubts the single most important factor in shaping the lives of the teenagers. The most recent studies done on what most influences teens all the way through high school validate. Every study, every respected study validates that the parents are the most influential to their kids all the way through high school.
Amen.
Not the youth leader, not the teacher, not the coach. It's the parents. It's where they live. I've got this quote. I like this. It says, I'm going to read this last part. Then I want to go over one thing and then we'll break up in our groups. But it says, don't necessarily pray that things get easier as a parent, but that you get better. Don't necessarily pray for fewer problems, but greater faith and skills as a parent. Don't necessarily pray for less challenges, but more wisdom. And don't necessarily pray for less acting out by your teen, but for you to act as Jesus would in response to them. I may find a different time to give you these. Yeah, you know what? I'm not going to keep going. I'm going to stop because I've been talking enough. I'll find another time to put that in there. But that's part one. Okay? And what we have now, which I believe is, to me, I believe that's great information for you to chew on, pray about, even have quiet times on and pray specifically for your kids, help trying to understand them more. But this to me is the more powerful stage right now, is I've got a set of questions and I'd like us for to break up in groups of six and we all discuss these questions together. All we need in each group is one facilitator. All the facilitator does is read the questions. And what I ask is don't monopolize the time. Speak briefly, but speak your heart. Speak your heart on some of these questions, but I think you get a lot out of these discussion times. Okay, so I've got. So what we need is a facilitator, and again, these questions are a guide. If a conversation's flowing, you know, let the Holy Spirit go, let it lead. How long do you want to do the discussions for? Want to maybe go for a half hour, 35 minutes? Go to about 9:15. What time were you planning on going till?
9:30.
Okay. So you can go till 9:15 or 9:30. Where were the questions, Joe? Where did I put them? I know. Oh, here they are.